Time now for the College Basketball Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
Sorry, but like the third biggest city in Kansas is Topeka, right? The third biggest city in Ohio is Cleveland.
With SI's Pat Forty.
Hey, happy National Beer Day to everybody too, though. Let's get that.
Yep.
Here's Pat and Dan.
I welcome to the pod. Bob Bowlsby, pour one out, Pat.
Yeah. Got to pour out a bad Texas beer, I guess, you know, down there in Big 12 country.
Lone Star.
Not many good bears in Texas, I'm afraid.
Hey, I like some Shiner. Shiner's good.
Shiner's not good. Shiner is not a good beer.
I love it.
No. Shiner is not a good beer. No.
I've had Shiner Bock. That's not a bad
beer. You drink Busch Light. There's photographic evidence. Oh, there actually. Look. There's evidence of Dan Wetzel drinking a Busch Light right now, right here, right now, during the taping of this podcast.
Whatever. He's not leaving because of the beer.
No.
Bob Bowlsby, I always thought he was a step slow on a lot of things. I actually thought he sped up a lot. He got over the philosophical barriers that crushed the, that made no sense to me. And I actually thought he was pretty good lately.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mainly because he started agreeing with me. That's how I rate. Why is he leaving, Pat?
I think he's leaving because it was time to leave, either by push or jump. You know, he was the guy in charge when Texas and Oklahoma jumped in a potentially fatal blow to the entire conference, and was widely portrayed, I don't know how accurately, but widely portrayed as being, you know, kind of asleep at the switch while that was going on. I'm not sure how in tune anybody would have been to that, because it was pretty clandestine. But that was the way it was portrayed. And look, he had the hardest job, I think, of any of the Power Five conference commissioners. Pac-12 may be less powerful, less successful, but it's also been more harmonious and more cohesive than the Big 12 has ever been. The Big 12 has always been a just mess of conflict and anger and acrimony and Texas power plays and resentment to Texas power plays. So he had a hard job keeping it together. And I mean, this was, I would say, inevitable at some point that this would have happened. So I think Bob Bowlsby was a perfectly fine, functional, at times very successful modern commissioner. As you alluded to, he was behind the curve on a lot of stuff and maybe caught up to a degree as things went along. But he was part of the old establishment, and it's tough time to be part of the old establishment. Things have changed so dramatically and will continue to change that dramatically that, you know, everybody has their time and place, and his time and place has gone.
Yeah, look, he had a hard job.
Very.
I remember just, you know, one time it was like, well, look at these, the SEC, the Big Ten have more money. You know, it's like, there's no way for the Big 12 to ever have equal money. I mean, they just, in Kansas, there's lots of fields. Oklahoma, there's lots of fields. In Ohio, there's lots of cities.
Yeah.
It's in Pennsylvania, there's lots of, it's just population. I mean, there's, what are you going to do?
Right.
Right. The commissioner cannot all of a sudden get, you know, 50 million more Americans to move into these states. And in some ways, he was affected dramatically by the lost decade of Texas football.
Yep.
Texas football was doing what Texas football should have done. Then the league is maybe in a different place, and there's certainly more success. There might be more postseason success. So, you know, that's sort of the problem of being tied to, you know, just a couple programs. But again, what are you supposed to do?
Right.
You're the commissioner. You can't just make things happen. In some ways, he, on multiple occasions, he was able to keep things together.
Yeah.
I thought he handled the defection of Oklahoma and Texas really well, did a pretty good job, kept the lead together, and then poached some other teams. So I don't think he's without some successes there, a lot of successes against very difficult odds. And like, again, like duplicity from Texas and Oklahoma. I mean, they're
right. I mean, they were not dealing above the board in good faith with him.
Yeah. So there's not like you could just snap your fingers and get a better TV deal.
Right.
It's just not going to happen. You know, sorry, but like the third biggest city in Kansas is Topeka, right? The third biggest city in Ohio is Cleveland. It's just not fair.
No, the fact they have one super populous state in the Big 12, And it's a very balkanized state. There is SEC in it. There is AAC. There's, you know, all the, there's all these entities. And Texas is the hard one to deal with. And they're the linchpin in that state.
So, and it's a massively diverse state where people don't all care about college football.
Yeah, exactly.
Lots of people don't care at all about college
football. Pro sports.
Right. You have a city like El Paso, is a big city. They don't care. They're watching boxing and different, you know, it's just Texas is a
until the miners become a power because
until the miners become a power, it's coming. It's happening one day
soon.
No, but it's just different. It's just different. So you do what you can do. I thought he was for a long time was outrageously principled, or if you want to call it principled, but stuck with these ideals. I remember arguing stipends with him. I remember there was a very bit, you know, about the cross-country runner tries just as hard as the basketball player. And some of the thinking was just very old and very backward and very patronizing and paternalistic. And they weren't jumping ahead of things. Look, I've said for years, when I look at these leagues, they should have done this 10, 15 years ago and saved themselves, was get that playoff with your automatic berths.
Sure.
And I remember arguing with the Big East, Trangisi, and no. And the Big East doesn't even exist anymore. And Trangisi's out. Now you've argued it with the Big 12. And then at the end, he was trying to get it because but if he got it done earlier when they had enough momentum to have done it, it was all, well, let's see what they deferred too much to Delaney.
Right.
In the end of the day, they're going to eat those guys on the Big Ten is too big to fail. It's not failing.
Right. And the Big SEC Ten and the SEC, own beast, both.
Yeah.
And after that, but the Big Ten can sit back and go, well,
we're not going to be the SEC. We don't want that because they can still survive. Now, maybe one day that changes, but probably not because they share a $10 billion in research grants. And I mean, there's so much money that has nothing to do with sports. Other than that, maybe you poach away Ohio State or something, but probably not. It's probably impossible. You needed to be super aggressive. And I always said the reason for Texas and Oklahoma to stay in your league is if you have. They have an easy path into the playoff. That's your advantage. You'll never, ever be able to match funds with the Big Ten or the Pac, or even the Pac-12 or the SEC. You're never, if those, and those, they had open invitations to go to any of those leagues. And you have to change the dynamic to what the advantage you can provide. And you'll never be able to provide the money, the same money. Maybe you provide access to the postseason. That's one of them. Or maybe you do something else.
And that's,
instead, it was drag your heels, and then it was too late.
Right. I still believe there's a decent chance Oklahoma and Texas regret their decision because they are giving up that access. I mean, Oklahoma, my gosh, they've been to multiple playoffs with teams that I don't think would have been able to win other leagues and thus would have had a very hard time getting into the playoffs. So they are taking their chances. I mean, the Big 12 offered them a certain something, and they left it. And I will say, like, to Bowlesby's credit and to the credit of the rest of the league, I do think after suffering a massive blow of losing those two schools, they did the best they could. Absolutely. In recouping. You know, bringing in BYU and UCF and Houston, Cincinnati. Those are good programs, football and basketball, all of them, and sustaining a conference where it looked like they could just flat split. And really
fighting for that automatic bid.
Yeah, right.
And so now you have a wide open league that should be a lot of fun, especially if you get an automatic bid. At least one is getting in because any number of teams can win every year. Right. And your basketball is terrific. It's never been better.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. They've won the last two championships. That was funny. I talked to Bowlesby in New Orleans, and obviously I didn't see this coming. But, you know, I was like, hey, you know, you guys got a chance to win back-to-back championships. And he was very excited and proud about that in basketball because it was with teams that weren't leaving. It was teams that were staying in Kansas and Baylor, you know. Yeah, with what they're bringing in, they should continue to be the best conference in the country.
Yeah, they're bringing in good basketball, too. I mean, Houston's excellent.
Yes.
Cincinnati has great traditions. UCF always has potential. And BYU's got great tradition and has potential.
Yeah. So,
basketball should be good. He did a lot of good things, kept to a round robin in basketball and football. That was a little clunky when they went to the thing, but whatever. Mixed bag, but at the end of the day, didn't work out. I think if he had gotten that playoff done sooner, maybe it helps. Maybe none of that stuff would have, but I just know that all these leagues and commissioners have been saying you should have been doing this 10 years ago. It didn't work out.
Yeah, right. No, exactly. People that, again, like so many people in college sports, couldn't quite see it coming, you know? You know, I was told back in early August, probably, Dan, after we got back from Tokyo, that, you know, kind of watch out, Bowlesby's probably going to be gone. The thought then was, we want to, from a Big 12 standpoint, we want to keep Bob around to help get through this stabilization time, you know, and then they went and got BYU and UCF and Cincinnati and Houston. But then after we've gotten through that, hey, we're probably going to be ready for new leadership. So again, pushed or jumped, either way, I think this was an inevitable time that was going to happen sometime in 2022.
Well, I think for the Big 12, it's about, again, gaining access to the championship, guaranteed access. It just has to be a priority because it will drive so much of the train and promote your league so much. Once you don't have that guaranteed or likely access to a championship, your league is in a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
You're the American, right. You're the Mountain West. You are second tier. They have to find a way to get an automatic bid.
Yeah.
They just have to.
Vital. Absolutely vital. And that's 100% where, again,
fine. That's when he jumped the thing. But do that. Celebrate who you are. There's still a lot of great programs. There's a lot of great passion. And I don't believe that the talent will drop off if you have that access, because just because we're having fewer teams in so-called people want to be like, well, there's only gonna be like three major conferences or four. There's still whatever number of players. Like, the players got to go somewhere.
Yep.
Right. So, and these are still great places to go play and some really good recruits. You have to have access to that championship. But if all of a sudden it's Oklahoma State that's in the playoff and Oklahoma isn't, let's say that happens, or every year is a different one.
Yep.
So one year it's a very even league now.
Absolutely.
Nobody's got what's the best football program that's remaining? Oklahoma State
right now. Over Baylor, because Oklahoma State's been more consistent. Yeah. But yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
But not by a ton.
No, and then look where Baylor is situated. Not far from Dallas, not that far from Houston, you know, not too far from Austin, San Antonio. You can get a billion players there and be competitive. They have been. So as you said, look, there's still the same number of players in Texas. If they want to play in Texas,
sit there and go, well, I want to go to Boston College now because they're technically in a bigger league, or I'm going to Minnesota because it's it. No, they'll stay. A lot will stay. There's still a great future. And I don't think Bowlesby did not leave them dead. He did a pretty good job. I would have liked to seen him jump earlier on a lot of stuff. But I will acknowledge that maybe that wouldn't have mattered. But it's hard to say.
I
just thought this was never going to matter.
Right.
Because once it becomes about money, you're going to lose. And then you go on. And they kind of the only reason they got the reprieve was because the state legislature in Oklahoma and Texas wouldn't let them go without Texas Tech and Oklahoma State the first time. But eventually,
That was 10 years ago, right?
Yeah, and eventually they got their way around that.
Yeah. I guess my epitaph on Bowlesby would be somebody who was very much a part of the way college machinery worked, for good and for ill. Smart guy, but also probably too stuck in the ways that things had always been, and, you know, an administrative wonk, and maybe things kind of passed him by to a degree. He may have caught up a little bit at the end, but ultimately he was overseeing, again, the hardest conference to keep together and keep cohesive and keep moving forward. And it was probably inevitable that, you know, whether it used to be Dan Beebe, who I also saw in New Orleans. It's funny. I saw Bowlesby and Beebe about a half hour apart, you know, and Beebe was the guy who was the sacrificial lamb back.
But he did the same. He was worse at it. But he did the same problem.
No, he was definitely
opposed the playoff. Yeah. Opposed opposed that.
Bowlesby was much
more
smarter.
He was way stuck in the mud.
Yeah,
and it was all like, it'll work out. And it's like, and these guys are not your friends.
No, but
I don't know, man.
Being the commissioner of the Big 12 is like being a bull rider on the rodeo. You know, eventually you're getting thrown off. So ride as long as you can.
Right. So who's gonna ride?
Yeah,
Greg Byrne. What, he jumped from Bama?
Good question. Who's the next bull rider? It will be easier because the bull is not going to be a Longhorn. You know, you don't have to deal with that. But Greg Byrne was a name that was certainly in the hopper with the Pac-12, the Alabama AD. Really good, sharp AD at Arizona and then at Alabama.
What about Mac Rhodes at Baylor? But has that been shot? I've been covering golf the last 3 days, so I'm a little out of the Has he denied any interest?
Oh, his name's in the mix. His name's in the mix. He signed a 10-year deal, or he agreed to a 10-year deal at Baylor.
I saw that. You know,
that what is that?
There's plenty of people that can do the job. And again, this league is not dead.
No, there's so many good.
There's so much potential there.
It'll be sought after. There's no doubt.
Yes, and it can't fight the SEC on SEC's terms. It has to find a different way to do it. And that's the only trickiness. But still a lot of good games and a lot of good teams. But they're just not going to get the TV money, especially without Texas and Oklahoma.
They're not going to get the TV money, no. But what you lose with Texas, you also gain without Texas, which is a little bit more conference cohesion, theoretically. The one name that I saw that somebody's going to have to convince me how this is possible is Joe Castiglione. You're going to tell me that the other schools in the Big 12 are going to say, yeah, that guy who helped organize the destabilization of the conference, we're going to make him the commissioner now? No.
But how about why would you blow up a league and then take it over?
Right. No.
No.
There's some Oliver Luck talk out there. I like Oliver. I think he's a super smart guy who's been in the league and he would be fine. You know, you could name off a half dozen ADs and a couple, you know, Gloria Navarez, who's the commissioner of the West Coast Conference, who did work at Oklahoma. She's another one. She's a very sharp woman who's on the way up in the business for sure. They will have not that much problem coming up, I think, with a good commissioner and maintaining viability going forward. That league is fine. It's just not going to get the TV revenue it once did. Dan, I have one question to ask you here as we're looking at each other on Zoom call. There appear to be like VHS cassettes in the background of your where you are in Augusta.
Is that a nice copy of Steel Magnolias behind you, VHS or something?
I think those are books.
Are they books? Okay. They're so shiny. They look to me like
books. Yeah. Romance. I don't know. This is a rented house.
Yeah. So
I do not know what's on the, I have not looked at that bookcase.
Okay. But that one of the unique things of covering the Masters is you stay in a house. You don't stay in a Marriott, right?
No.
If you could explain, I think people would kind of like to hear how this works and who are you staying with and how many times
have
you
barbecued. We got a whole bunch of sports writers and we stay here every year.
Same
house for 12, 13 years, at least. I don't know. I don't know how many years I've been coming down here. I don't come every year. I didn't come the last two because they limited the numbers for COVID and all that. So anyway, we're back. So yeah, we got a whole house full of sports writers, which is pretty good. You work all day.
Who do you got?
We have Wright Thompson here from ESPN. We have Steve Politti from New Jersey, NJ.com. A couple of Yahoo people, Jay Busby and Jay Hart.
Right.
We have a bunch. And then through the years, has been rotating people from different. We've had Kansas City star people. We have Andrew Beaton right now from the Wall Street Journal, usually covers the NFL.
Yep.
And Brian Costa. We've had many sports writers come through here. We are the... We're our house. Lots of people want to come visit our house because it's so much fun, of course.
It's the party house.
I'm here.
Yeah.
There's a lot of whiskey and a lot of Busch Light.
Well, I was going to say my colleague and friend Ross Dellinger texted me a picture yesterday and said, of a Busch Light can, and said, guess who I'm hanging out with? I knew right away. That was all I needed to know. How far is the house from the course?
Like 20 minutes. Depends on the traffic, but about 20 minutes.
Yeah,
Martinez. We're here in Martinez, which is spelled Martinez, but they call it Martinez out here.
So, you've been known to grill chicken.
We grill a lot of chicken. We grill a lot. We cook a lot. There's some incredible meals. It's good times. It's not bad. It's better than a hotel. I can tell you that. Any of our listeners that travel for work.
Yeah.
Hotels are great, but it's nice when you're not in one sometimes.
Yeah. We've been
if you can get a house
to do a Super Bowl house with our crew.
We used to at Yahoo. Yeah. We used to do
we need to hire that back up.
Like a, did you do a Daytona house too, I think, or something?
We had a Daytona 500 house. We used to do Super Bowl houses. Depends how many people you have.
Right.
It's better, cheaper. Especially Augusta. So if you've never been to the Masters, Augusta's like a mid-sized city, but I don't know how many people live in Augusta, but it's not a tiny town, but it's a city, but it's not a huge city, and it gets overrun with the Masters. I mean, we don't know how many people they let into the Masters, but it might be 40,000 a day. I don't know, 50. I have no idea. And then there's workers. I mean, it's just this is the biggest week of in Augusta. So the hotels fill up, like little hotels, huge rates, you know.
Yeah.
Like paying $500 a night at the Red Roof Inn or so. I mean, it may be even more. I don't even know. So that's not, and then all the restaurants are just packed. So you're going, you know, Applebee. I mean, and we're, you know, just, they just, it's not right. equipped to have this many people come into this one area of the city, too. City's fairly spread out, but nobody's, like, very few people are downtown or, because Augusta National's out by the highway. So the area just gets overloaded with everything. So
did you cook the chicken tonight?
I did not. I'm busy okay. working here. I haven't eaten.
You haven't eaten? Oh, my gosh. No. We better hurry up with this. All right.
Yeah, yeah. So
moving
yeah,
forward.
That's how you cover the Masters. Well, you're there all day. You know, starts at sunrise, ends at sunset.
Yep. Yep.
And then you come home and you make the most of it. But we're
good. So, is yeah, the pimento cheese actually that good?
I don't like the pimento cheese.
What do you go with? What is your sandwich there?
I guess I would go with the Master's Club, which is just some turkey and ham. So the beauty of the Master's sandwiches is they're cheap. You can get a pimento cheese sandwich for $1.50. I'm just not a pimento cheese guy. But some people are absolutely die for it. Fathers and sons. Pimento and cheese.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That's the Chris Vernon lines. Yeah. But you can get beers cheap out in the course. Like people, if you come, you get to the Masters, everything's going to cost you an arm and a leg to get to the Masters.
But once you get in the gates,
bag, yeah. that is cheap to eat.
Yeah.
But if you go actually buy anything, you're going to, I mean, it's expensive.
Yeah.
No. But they have kept the lid on the prices for the little sandwiches and stuff. But again, like, what is this pimento and cheese? Like, how much can you really charge for a pimento and cheese sandwich? Pimento cheese sandwich.
Yeah. I mean, $1.50 sounds like an accurate price point to me.
Yeah,
frankly.
It's one spread of like pimento cheese.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Between two pieces of white bread.
And yeah. everyone says it's great. Well, part of it is because like where you're eating it. You're like looking at Amen Corner and you're like eating a,
Yes. You could have a bad charcuterie plate on the French Riviera, but it's still the French Riviera. And so it's a really good charcuterie plate, right?
So anyway, I don't know what Tiger is eating tonight, but hopefully enough that he's back on the course.
Oh, what a day. That was awesome. That was so fun to watch him play well.
He did well. Yeah. I was impressed. Yeah.
No, it was great. Great, great, great.
Yeah, I mean, one under. He's got a shot at the cut and a real good shot at the cut, obviously.
Yeah.
It's just how long can he hold up? I don't know.
Yeah, that's what was his quote said, you know, a lot of ice for the next 18 hours to get ready for the second round. So, yeah.
He had a line when he was talking to the kind of the print writers that was fascinating. And we'll get back to college sports, but Tiger kind of transcends. They asked, Ian O'Connor, the New York Daily News asked, is this a win? And for Tiger, in his entire career, there's only been one type of win, which is the actual win.
Right.
I've seen him storm out of this place coming in second.
Sure.
There was never a moral victory, a close, hey, top five. No.
Right. No.
You win or you lose. That is Tiger. And then if you win or you fail, and then you go to work more till you win.
Right.
That's it. And today he said, yeah, that was a win.
Did he? Good. Good. I'm glad he could acknowledge that and think that.
10 months ago, he's laying in bed. He can't get out.
Yeah, right.
14 months ago, you look and go, he might be dead. Doctors are going, do we have? He's got tibia and fibula, both compound fractures, open wounds. I mean, talk of do we amputate? And he has not played a competitive round since the fall of 2020.
Right.
And they had the Fall Masters. So he goes basically 17 months without playing a competitive round of golf, and he steps out into a major and goes one under.
Yeah. No, it's incredible.
I don't care what he does. He can miss the cut on Friday.
Right.
And by the time maybe he did. Yeah, come on. So that was kind of nice to see, like Tiger with perspective. What is happening?
Right. Right. Exactly. And that's the thing, because once you get him between the ropes, he's going to start thinking, what do I need to do to win? But for everyone else watching, it's like, holy cow, you actually just put on the spikes and played 18 holes under par at Augusta 14 months after looked like your career was over. Yeah, no, that's a huge win. That's a triumph.
I have covered Tiger for a long time here and in other places. And man, there was one of the years in San Diego I thought was the biggest crowd I've ever seen gathered around one single golf hole.
Torrey Pines, 72nd hole.
It was something like it looked like 20,000 people.
I was there.
But today might have gotten that too on the first. I mean, it was just nobody could move. people are 40, 45 back. You couldn't see. No one could see.
I bet.
45 rows of people standing downhill. So you can't even see in. You couldn't see anything. They're just there. All 445-yard hole.
Wow.
Now, they're not going 40 deep all the way, but they're going 3-4 deep in the middle. I mean, it's just like, how many people are here trying? Yeah. No one's seeing anything. Right. And they don't care.
Yeah. No.
They're just happy he was there.
Be in the vicinity. That's it. I will say, like, to me, in my opinion, in the last quarter century, the two most compelling athletes by far are Tiger Woods and Michael Phelps. And I'd put Tiger over Michael. But in American athletes.
I would certainly put Tiger over Michael. Michael's very compelling as well. I would probably put him in that list. I would have to really look at that list.
Yeah, go ahead. You look
most
at the list.
Compelling.
Yeah, get back to us.
Tebow as a college athlete.
Yeah, but now Tebow was short, shelf life, you know.
Tebow was a sensation.
Yeah.
I don't think I could give him that level. Just first off, his best days were college and then that one playoff run.
One playoff huge pass, star. Really.
Yeah. I mean, Tom Brady's more compelling than that.
He is. Far he is, compelling. But he's not as compelling as the other guys. That's, you know, Brady has incredible longevity and incredible success. Less compelling, in my opinion.
I don't know, man. I thought Brady's pretty compelling. LeBron is, I mean, it depends LeBron, what your definition of LeBron, I mean, is compelling. He's been under, it's like Tiger. There's always drama, too. There's
well, that's, I would put LeBron above Brady. You know, from that standpoint, I don't know. LeBron's drama is mostly like, where am I going to play? You know?
Yeah, but it was like, you know, he couldn't make it work in Cleveland. Then he goes to Miami and it doesn't work. Then it does. And then he decides I'll go back to Cleveland and win it.
Right.
And he's down 3-1 to this mega team in Golden State. But then he does win it.
Yeah.
Then he goes to LA and it's a disaster. But they do win a title. Like, so LeBron, every week of LeBron's career has been kind of interesting.
It has.
I mean, Michael Phelps is a great athlete, but it's like he pops up every 4 years.
When he pops up, he's the best ever. And then, except for when he quits or tries to quit and his coach makes him come back.
Yeah.
You know,
I can't
the comeback's there. That's, I recognize my own swimming bias there.
I had nothing against Phelps, but.
But still, I just, like, LeBron, again, it's like just, I want to play here. No, I want to play there. No, I'd like to play over there.
Yeah, but it was like, it's like a soap opera and like a, he's like a therapy patient with each decision.
I mean, over there.
It's just like, oh my God, is this dramatic? I mean, he went back to Cleveland to deliver the title. And then when he had his, that was compelling, man.
It was very compelling.
I don't know what compelling is. This would hard for a college athlete to truly make it. Tebow would probably be the closest. Johnny Tebow Football was obviously a huge sensation
football
for a year and a half.
Yeah, but that he was compelling for sure.
He was fun with the Browns for that first year, but you gotta last a little bit longer. Yeah, hard to defeat Tiger. Hard to defeat Tiger in anything. I was actually talking with like three guys just standing around. I don't even know who they were. There's three other golf fans standing there. You stand around a lot in golf. And no one's allowed to have their phone out in the course. So
right, yeah. So you have to.
So they were debating whether he was the most famous athlete in the world, or Lionel Messi was. Or
I don't know.
Ronaldo.
I don't have good world soccer perspective.
My guess is it's Lionel Messi because literally they play soccer everywhere.
Right.
Like I just don't know how many people in Africa or South America follow golf at all.
Right.
They all follow soccer. Everybody's,
maybe not that many. Although,
right, everyone's
golf
heard of Lionel Messi.
Huge in Asia, and
it
Tiger,
is very big
Tiger
in Asia,
has
so
Asian heritage. I mean,
it's interesting. It was kind of an interesting.
That'd be a good.
They
discussion.
Had him third behind Messi and Ronaldo.
Could be. Again, I'm the wrong person to ask about that because my soccer knowledge is.
Solly, you're our soccer.
Yeah,
soccer
I would say so. Just with the World Cup and that big stage, like that's hard to top. Everybody from.
I don't know how you get bigger.
Yeah, you can't get bigger than that. And talk about longevity. The dude's been doing it for a long time. So, and he has a epic athletes.
Well, I mean, right there. There's no Tiger Woods epic athlete.
Wait a minute. Sorry. Yeah, let me just back up one time. He's been doing it a long time. How long has Messi been on the world stage?
Oh, this is going to be his fourth World Cup, right? So it's been
20 years.
Yeah.
He was 19. He started at Barcelona. So it was 16 years ago, 15.
Right. So, but Tiger won the Masters in 1997, 25 yeah,
years. It's just soccer. It's just.
I get it.
Like of all the countries where they care the least is America.
Right.
Okay. And virtually every sports fan in America probably knows who Lionel Messi is. They may not know much about him. I don't think when we mentioned Lionel Messi on here, anybody listening to this podcast went, who the hell is that?
Probably not.
They've heard of at least there's this soccer player named Lionel Messi. So I guess it's how do you rate fame? But then there's at least many, many millions of Americans are like, love Lionel Messi. Not enough to buy enough epic athletes, unfortunately. But
do you have sales by book? Do we know who's your biggest seller?
Steph Curry.
Yeah, okay. All right.
Yeah.
He should be. So I'm okay with that. Yeah. Okay.
All right. So we're off kilter here.
We're completely off the rails here.
All right. Interesting a bit from a tweet from Bruce Feldman, our buddy at the Athletic, Fox Sports. Louisiana student athletes, high school student athletes, are now cleared to get NIL deals while in high school. As one source points out, without question, the biggest winner is Arch Manning. So Arch could probably get a lot of deals. I just don't know if his family will have him do any.
Well, do they need it? Hell no, they don't need it. You know? I mean,
conceivably
like,
get one of those Caesars commercials, but Cooper's already like finagled his way.
He's
going
to have to box out the rest of the family for these deals.
I mean, they are keeping Arch low key. It's pretty
very low key.
He joined Twitter and didn't just do a tweet. He doesn't say where he's visiting. He doesn't do interviews. Yeah. Good for them. They think that's the best way to protect him. Or that's what they're comfortable with. Good. I don't know that he's going to jump on a ton of money. What's interesting to me is this opens up the possibility that we always talked about is, you know, the colleges could start paying the high school kids, the kids in high school, which they did when they were just cheating.
Right.
But it just moves the collective down. But man, if you think paying 18-year-olds is a roll of the dice, wait till some coach convinces you should start paying a 15-year-old.
Right. Oh, yeah. No, that's been like one of my concerns about this whole thing. Going back, I remember having this conversation with Mike Slive at SEC Football Media Days like 5 years ago when he was saying, we need to just open it up to agents. It's like, okay, but the agents aren't going to start with guys when they're freshmen in college. They're going to start when they're senior, junior, sophomores. They already were. They already were, especially in basketball, but even more in football. Like it's just the trickle down to a younger, the younger you trickle down, the more speculative it becomes. The more bad deals you make, the more families that aren't accustomed to what's going on. I mean, if your kid has been a big deal for 3 years by the time they're 17, you kind of got a lay of the land. If all of a sudden at 14, you're being hit up like, hey, we could do this NIL deal and here, this guy could be your agent. Are you just going to grab onto the first thing that comes along and it's not a good deal or what? I mean, that's kind of the Zion Williamson thing. If you go back, if you believe some of the lawsuits and everything else that went on there was the first people started paying Zion Williamson eventually got cut out of paying Zion Williamson.
But what if you can go to a more reputable place and it's like CAA is walking in?
But are they going to walk in on 14-year-olds?
I don't know. No, I mean, look, people are going to sign some bad deals. There's no question. But like I say, man, people make bad mistakes all the time. They open businesses that fail. They get married and divorced.
It's
Hollywood. It's tough. I just have a hard time legislating it, but I agree. Yeah. There will be some terrible deals and there will be money spent out on kids that just never pan out.
Oh,
I mean, for every guy that sits there and you go, that's the number one player in this class. And some like the LeBron James in sophomore year of basketball, where you're like, holy crap. There's so many top guys that just never do anything.
Yeah.
And I just wonder at what point there's going to be a bubble on this where there's all this money now in collectives, everyone's throwing money in and it's going to hurt the school's coffers because this is basically donation money. They're just going into this. This is my guess. And this is what the athletic departments feel. But at some point, people will be like, that was a complete waste of money.
Yeah.
Like, why did I give $5,000, $10,000, $100,000, $1 million? And this kid never panned out. Or I'm paying a kid 3 years ahead of time.
When he was award.
I don't know.
Oh, yeah. Spencer Rattler. I mean, but that was after he even already got to college.
That's the problem. You don't, you just have no idea the trance, it's just going to be, I don't know. It's going to be wild. But
I mean, you've seen it. I've seen it. You go back even, 15, 16, 17 years ago, Greg Oden was the absolute can't miss center. He was going to be the next Bill Russell, at least. Maybe even the next Wilt Chamberlain. And no, I mean, part of that was physical, but then part of it.
He was great in college.
He was great for his 1 year in college.
But had he, yeah, but that was it. Then he was hurt.
Then, yeah, he was hurt.
Well, and that's Zion. I mean, do we know if Zion's going
to? No, we don't.
I said this on this podcast a long time ago. Like, Zion's too big. Can you do it? I hope he can. I hope he comes back. But there's a reason we've never seen guys try this, you know?
Right.
At that size. And, you know, I mean,
boy, I tell
very
you what.
Well, Ja Morant and Kevin Durant have a very interesting, you know, thing of being just, we'll see what Ja becomes as good as Kevin, but he's on his way.
Oh, yeah. He's been phenomenal now for like 3 years in the NBA. So he's proving it out. But it was funny being in New Orleans with Zion, as a matter of fact. You speak with him, you know, like he's just disappeared. He's not out in public. He's not playing, obviously, but he's not around the team. It's like, what happened? Because this guy, you know, was so magnetic and really personable and charming in college. And now he's become almost recluse. And you can hear various theories. Some people blame the family and this and that, blah, 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 blah. I don't know what, but it's amazing how quickly you can go from can't miss to what happened.
I don't know if you saw this. Notre Dame is scheduled to play Tennessee State in 2023, the HBCU.
Yes.
First HBCU it's ever played, but that will be Notre Dame's first FCS game ever. It's really kind of a point of pride of Notre Dame. I believe it was them, UCLA, and USC for a long time. And
they're playing an HBCU team coming up. I can't remember which one, but they are.
Okay.
Right.
It's only going to be USC that's never played an FCS game. So that's a little something new for
Notre Dame. And I love it for Notre Dame. I mean, if you're going to play an FCS school, then yes, play an HBCU.
They didn't play an FCS, to be honest with you.
Well, I mean, it's not going to be a good game. You know, let's not delude ourselves as far as that. You know,
I kind of like that. If I was a fan of Notre Dame or USC, I would wear that as a point of pride. And now it's,
I mean, I understand that. And I don't disagree with that, but, you know, is there a big difference between playing Tennessee State or playing the
eighth best
team in the MAC?
State,
I don't know.
USC and Clemson on the schedule that year. Why not with that non-con game? Go help somebody out.
Yeah.
And give them a check.
Right. So that's, yeah. And if you're going to,
that million dollars.
But if you're going to play a body bag, if you're going to play a body bag game, play an HBCU, engender some goodwill there, and then also perhaps help yourself recruiting in Nashville, where Tennessee State is. And there's some players.
This is not the worst. I'm not going to go. I mean, whatever. If I was a Notre Dame fan, I would have thought the other thing was cool.
Well, hey, for a long time, Notre Dame didn't even play anybody from the MAC or the Sun Belt. You know, I mean, they maintained a pretty tight circle of who they would play, but that was a while ago, and now this is a different era. So,
interesting story about Treylon Burks, who's headed to the NFL from Arkansas. Alex Scarborough talked to Coach Sam Pittman. Let me just read you this: why Treylon Burks is perfect for the NFL. Pittman struggled to come up with the proper way to describe Burks: smart, articulate, someone who cares about his teammates. But the word he kept coming back to was country. Okay, you want to know how country is? He hunts wild boar with his dogs in the whole nine yards.
Pretty country.
Yes, you read that correctly. Burks doesn't just fish. He doesn't just hunt deer with a crossbow. He goes out in the woods in search of wild boar with nothing but his dogs and a knife.
And a knife, not even a gun. Yeah.
No. Okay. Emphatically, Burks explains, we do not use guns. Essentially, what happens is this. The dogs find the hog and corner it. Then another dog is sent in to hold the wild animal in place. If it's too small, they'll turn the hog loose. If it's big enough to feed them and others, it's time to go in. Quote, using a gun takes the fun out of it, Burke said.
Oh, my God.
Having a knife, it's more of a thrill that you're getting up on a wild boar that could kill you. Honestly, it's just a thrill being out there with your friends and family having a good time. Burks knows how all of this sounds. The average wild boar is 200 pounds. They're powerful, yeah. And their tusks are there for a reason. Some people will probably consider me crazy, but that's just how I am.
Holy moly. So here I hear that, and I'm an NFL GM, and I'm like, yes, I want him going one-on-one for a ball with the safety or blocking on an outside linebacker. Yeah, holy cow.
Just don't do it while you're on a roster. But
well, I was going to say, yeah, or yes, he could be maimed or killed also after you've paid him however many millions of dollars. So good gravy.
You talk about, this brings up a totally side thing, the Treylon Burks killing, fighting the wild boar with his hands or with a knife.
With a knife.
This came up the other night while we were down here, a couple guys at this point. Do you know how many chickens get slaughtered in the world each year?
I don't know, but why did this come up?
America, I'll do America and the world. There are 9 billion chickens slaughtered and killed for food in America every year. 9 billion, yeah.
Just in America.
And there's 72 billion on Earth, which what they brought up is how many chickens are there out there? And, okay. How outnumbered are we? And what would happen if for whatever reason, like there was some kind of breakdown? And we got to think outside the box. Because you don't know. I mean, I don't know how this would happen, but there's some kind of breakdown and all of a sudden we couldn't slaughter the chickens in our normal way. Like if there's 9 billion chickens in America, okay, and there's about 370 million Americans, and we're counting babies and like old folk home, right?
Yeah, but so there's more than 9 billion. Like if we're killing 9 billion a year, then we've got more than 9 billion.
There's probably more, but let's just say that's 24 chickens per person. Like you could have 24 chickens attack
each
American. I mean, I don't think they're going to take everyone down. There's going to be a Treylon Burks. It's not going to have any problems with that.
So, yeah, no.
But they're going to put some damage in. Like... 20, if 24 chickens attacked you, Pat Forty, what would you do?
I would call for help. I would say,
but the next guy's got 24 on his ass.
All right, so yeah, well, if I thought this was an imminent threat, I would probably arm myself to begin with, and then, you know, you got to figure out, all right, how many can I kill by hand at a time? Like, are they all going to attack me at once or not?
I don't know, but if they ever got organized, that's a lot of chickens.
If they organized and mobilized, we might have issues. We might. Fortunately, they're dumb. They're chickens. Now, can I ask you this? This conversation that you had, was this perhaps over a bourbon or two, a beer, a Bush Light or two?
Yeah, pretty much out of stuff to talk about. Pretty interesting, though.
The master's veranda discussion of whether we can be overtaken and murdered by chickens.
Now, yeah. 24 roosters, too?
Well, ooh, boy. Hey, Cluck Norris. Yeah. If Cluck Norris led, I would be concerned.
President Cluck starts a revolution yes. of his
If President Cluck
friends.
Took over and like mobilized, we would be in trouble for sure.
All right, a couple more college sports notes. 4.85 million viewers for the women's NCAA championship game. Most watched college game on ESPN since 2008. I mean, whatever, they don't do the men's tournament, but that's a very nice number for women's basketball. The sport continued to grow more popular.
Yeah.
Good.
No, it's great. I will momentarily divert from the chicken onslaught, but...
Sorry to make a hard pivot there, but I mean, it's only so long I want to consider 24 chickens coming at it.
And frankly, I was going to say, yes, it is a chicken onslaught because South Carolina Gamecocks won the title. Yeah. So the chicken onslaught continues. No, I think it's great. And I do think there has been a conscious movement by people in the media and others like, hey, you know what? Yes, the other tournament is happening at the same time. Go back to Sedona Prince from Oregon, you know, shining a light on the inequity and just reminding people our tournament's good, too. And I do think that people have paid more attention. There's been more media coverage. And this is what we're getting. And you watch and it's good basketball. I mean,
yeah,
these
you
are
get
good
to the
teams.
End. It's really good basketball. Like there's a lot
of beginning too. There was a lot of upsets this year.
Yeah, it was a more competitive tournament this year than it had been for a long time. But
yeah,
not bad. 20. I mean, that's a good number, and it'll continue to go. And when they, I think they'll break out the NCAA. Right now, the NCAA sell the men's basketball tournament, and then they package every other sport together.
Yeah,
and I think that they can package the women's basketball. They'll get more money out of ESPN. Now, whether ESPN will, the only thing would be ESPN promotes that thing. Nobody promotes women's basketball more than ESPN.
Oh, no. Right.
So they'll pay more, and then they'll probably have to promote more, but they put a lot on. So good step for women's basketball. Somebody
talking about the worst TV deals ever, and that was the top one, even over CBS's SEC deal.
The
package, because college baseball is growing, college volleyball is growing.
Yeah. Like
that is a really good deal.
To package all of those together is just stupid. It really is. I mean, you break some of those out, they will do well. They'll have big audiences. And again, the more ESPN invests, the more they will promote. Excessive self-promotion network, ESPN. They'll do it.
Yeah. I mean, I think part of the reasoning on that was they want they'll have women's bowling championship on ESPN. Right. And I don't know that they'll have that
if you ask them to do that. But right. I mean, if they already.
It's tricky. There's two sides to that coin. But yes, they should get more money, and that should help. They just need more competitive. At its highest level, women's basketball can be compelling. It doesn't have to, not everything has to be the biggest to be successful. And so, but they can continue to build audience and go. We've said it a million times. We think volleyball could get more. We think, obviously there's different audiences.
Baseball, softball.
The Frozen Four, the incredible Denver-Michigan game.
Yep.
It's getting played kind of late after, the bad. They don't promote. They don't care at all about them. I like it, but the final eight's on ESPNU,
Right. Let's just reiterate. The Denver Pioneers did defeat Michigan, which means I win our little race for the case for the hockey Final Four. So thank you.
That is true. You did win the Frozen Four.
Luke Hughes and Owen Power letting us down, Dan.
Yeah. Hey. Yeah, that was bad. So I don't know. We'll see what they do with all those other sports, but as it goes. All right. Finally, and we're going to start getting more heavily into spring practice talk and football talk.
Yeah.
Starting next week.
We will get there.
Sort of a transitional one between the Final Four, and we've been a little disjointed today. So thank you for sticking with us. But this one, we could not let the story could not get by. I'll just read it. A Dutch cheese heist. Heist has resulted in thousands of dollars lost and stern warnings to others to protect their products. The thievery occurred at a dairy farm in the Netherlands.
Good luck with that name.
Yeah, I'm not naming that.
Torin Polar Dacus.
I can't say William Christopher Sweeney's name. So somebody stole 3,500 pounds of cheese.
Okay. It's a lot. Do you carry that out? I mean, how does that work? That's a ton and a half plus of cheese.
Yeah, you're not running down the street like it's a diamond heist or something.
No, right. Yeah. You don't just drop it all in a little silk bag and get out of there. I mean,
maybe you're rolling down a hill because it's wheels of cheese. Like you're.
I don't know how they stole the cheese.
The best part about this is that there in 2016 alone, there was 160,000 pounds of cheese stolen in Wisconsin.
What? So cheese is like a high crime item now? Is that what we're getting 4% to?
4% of cheeses worldwide are stolen.
4% of the
most,
cheese.
According to Newsweek, it's the most stolen food on earth.
Come on.
Yeah. So you steal the cheese.
It's like art, but I'm jewels, still not sure how cars and cheese.
They explore the farm and then they know what to pack. Here's one story. We're a bit afraid of this. They don't shy away from entering a cheese farm with brute force. In no time, they fill their bus and leave.
Really?
Apparently, there's brute force. Brutes are out there.
Like armed cheese robbery.
I say armed, just brutes.
Okay, brutes, and they beat you up. And they load it on a bus. Cheese on a bus.
You could take good Dutch cheese and get it over to Eastern Europe, and it gets retraded into countries such as Russia. See?
Uh-oh. Because
there's economic boycotts now. You can't get any cheese.
Here we go. They're boycotting. They're actually funding the war on Ukraine, is what you were saying? The cheese?
They're just getting some cheese.
The cheese Russians, black market? Okay.
The average Russian's just like, dude, I want my cheese.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Okay.
So I had no idea that the most stolen food product on earth is cheese.
And that apparently it's easy to do. You show up in the Netherlands or probably Switzerland or France or whatever, and
story
and you're a brute and you just start taking cheese.
Yeah. So one of the ways they try to protect themselves is they press a like number, like a barcode into the rind of the cheese wheel.
Okay.
But obviously, as this expert that these guys interviewed, the number is pressed into the rind. It cannot be removed without damaging the cheese. However, they can't, so the thieves cannot sell the entire cheese in the Netherlands, but you cut off a piece and you can no longer see where the cheese comes
from. Well, yeah.
Yeah, you just chop right? off all the, I mean, this seems.
Wow, genius. Hey.
I want to meet these Wisconsin Badgers fans that are stealing 160,000.
That's 100 it.
Pounds of cheese.
We have renegade Wisconsin fans up there turning a cheese black market. It's unbelievable.
I'm a little dubious in this whole story. I mean, what? Black market cheese.
I mean, cheese can cost a lot of money. I mean, like, kind of weirdly, you know?
Good cheese is expensive. It's weird.
Yeah, right?
We're not you ever go, like, I've done that.
Yeah, like, for Christmas Eve, we'll try to put together a good charcuterie board, and all of a sudden you're spending $17 for a little wedge of something. You know, it's like, why? Why is that?
You got to pay for the security.
Yeah, that's it. You got to get these surveillance things to keep these bands of brutes from stealing your cheese. I don't know.
Roaming Europe, stealing
cheese.
Here's
what I'm going to guarantee. Much like Tiger Woods, we're going to keep working to improve over the next 5 days. And we're going to have a better show now.
We will. Hey, happy National Beer Day to everybody, too, though. Let's get that.
Yeah, you too. Even if you're, hopefully you're drinking.
Dan's having a Busch Light. He's letting everyone down by drinking bad beer on National Beer Day. But it's what we got.
Get a 30 rack down the corner. They don't sell it. They don't have it in the thing because no one's buying it.
Go eat your dinner.
Thank
eat
you for Augusta listening. Dinner. This is clearly a pod for people who like the pod.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. So, like I said, we're gonna do better. Ross, I did talk to Ross the other day. I might have him on the show.
Yeah.
Hopefully, he won't make fun of me for drinking Busch Light. I don't need another one of those. So, we'll see. Might have some.
You're in trouble there.
We might need to bring some guests in here to bail us out. Anyway, talk to you all later.